Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with Los Angeles-based illustrator, designer, and hand lettering artist, Jillian Adele. We talk about her time working in agencies in New York, the challenges of being self-employed, pole dancing, tarot readings, and more, all right after this. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prints for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prints can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prints can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners, Jack Prints can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prints has their lowest prices on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? $300? More? You can get it at Jack Prints for just $70. While we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prints is offering a free silver ink upgrade going on right now. But it's not just on silver ink. If you're looking to get something embroidered, you can get free silver thread too. So when you get something printed or embroidered, now through the end of the year, add some silver ink into that design. If you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prints Pocket Notes. They come with tons of great options, making them perfect for gifts, giveaways, branding, and custom office supplies. Custom pocket notebooks are sized for quick sketching and note-taking. Plus, unlike other printers who, make you design around their logo and have all those parameters like that, Jack Prints builds their custom notebooks from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in vivid full color. Jack Prints makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prints is giving you a great discount. You can save up to $75 on your next order. Just use promo code CS16podcast at checkout or visit jack.ink/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Jillian, thanks for joining me this evening.
Thanks for having me.
So, give us the Jillian Adele backstory. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, shoot. I grew up near Philly in the South Jersey area.
So, did you go to college out there, high school, all that fun stuff?
Oh, you want the, once upon a time I was born and then I went to college. I never really tell this part of the story because there's so many twists and turns and it's such a large story. So, I grew up there and then I went to college at Syracuse University. I studied graphic design there, but it took me a few tries at other things before I found graphic design.
That's what college is for.
Yeah. Yeah. And then even my program, once I found it, it didn't really make me the designer I am today. I mean, I guess that sounds like that should be obvious, but.
Didn't prepare you for the real working world?
No, I had no idea. I didn't know what graphic designers did in the real world. Are you drinking a beer? Oh, shoot. I didn't pour a beer. Jason, you didn't.
You still got time.
You didn't give me that as a preparation requirement. I didn't prepare the beer. Yeah, no, I had no idea, like, because the internet wasn't what it was. And so I was kind of like, oh, here's this thing where you can, like, make art, but it's, like, art for business. And so I guess that's mm-hmm. an acceptable profession, but I didn't actually know how that worked at all. And I apparently didn't even have the wherewithal to think that that was a problem. Actually, I mean, I did. I did. I remember senior year of college sitting in my professor's, like my senior class professor's office, and mm-hmm. knowing that there was a problem and knowing that there was like a large chunk of information that I didn't have that I needed to get from like where I was to where I wanted to be. And sure. She just kind of like threw her hands up and like never really helped me. It was really frustrating. It was, you know, it was really frustrating. So was this one of those, really bitter for a long time.
I can imagine. Was this yeah. one of those conversations where you're like, look, I know I don't know a lot, but I don't know what I don't know. Can you help me out here?
That was 100% like beginning, middle, and end what the conversation was. That was it. That was the whole thing. And she was kind of just like, well, okay. Yeah, like I don't remember anything that she really even said to me in terms of advice. And like at that stage in your life, you're so impressionable that like mm-hmm. So I also worked in music for 5 years, like in the music business, like booking and promoting concerts. And like I found okay. that at the same time that I found graphic design when I was 19. And but it was too late by the time I figured it out that I really liked that. It was too late for me to be a music industry major or anything like that. But I sure. hung out with all the music industry kids. The concert board were the kids who put on all the concerts on campus. And so mm-hmm. I would just go to all their meetings and like just follow them around and like market shows and try to learn from them. And there was like a class that I was able to audit. It was like the on-campus record label. And I just like did everything I could to try to learn about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't like technically be a major, but one of the music industry professors, my junior year, I sat in his office hours and I said, hey, like, I really love this as much as any of the music industry majors do, but and at the time also too, the music industry major, you had to play an instrument to also do the business part of it. It was in the music school.
I'm guessing by the way that you said that you do not play an instrument.
Not really anymore. Not good enough to like audition to get into the music school. I played guitar my senior year of high school and I played piano like in my early teen years, but nothing that I could leverage at all. And so they actually, it was awesome that my senior year, they did actually start up a program where that changed, and it's called the Bandier program. It's an awesome, awesome music industry program at Syracuse. Mm-hmm. And it straddled the art and the business school. And so it was like 100%, like if that had started up a few years earlier, mm-hmm. that's what I would have wanted to do. But I basically sat in those office hours and they said, okay, well, I love doing this and I want to do it for real. And I said, what do I do? I can't, you know, study it in school. And he said, well, go to New York City, you know, go down to the city for the summer. And so I was kind of like, okay. Sure. And so I did. And that was the first summer that I lived there between my junior and senior year of college. But that's why, like, I know that if my design professor had said something impressionable in that moment at all, mm-hmm. I would have just done it, because at that moment, you're so impressionable. You're such a sponge. There is a guy, so these are kind of related. There was a band that came out of Syracuse called Rah Rah Riot that got, mm-hmm. you know, pretty good leverage. Even still today, they're going strong. And when I went to New York, my friend was their manager, and they had just played a residency at this club venue down on the Lower East Side. And so he actually got me a gig assisting the head booker at that venue for the summer, which was awesome. But then also they had somebody making their posters. They were like these really cool screen print posters that I would sure. see around campus. And like for me, I'm like music music and art, band posters, like, that's exactly what I want to be doing, is making cool band posters. And so I asked the same person, my friend who was their manager, to, like, who made them. And it was this guy who had graduated 2 years prior, and I sent him a MySpace message, because that was the thing that we did at the time. MySpace was still the thing.
And who was in your top eight? Did you leave Tom in there?
Oh, hell no. No, that guy. No, because he didn't have, like, that emo side swipey haircut, you know? Like, everybody, do you know what I'm talking about? Like, everybody, like, looked the same.
Uh-huh.
Man, that was a great.
So he didn't look like he was an AFI.
Right. So, no, he was not, like, a scene band boy. So he was too nerdy for my copy. Now I love nerds. But I was young and loved cool dummies at the time. Band dummies. Just kidding. but I sent him this nice message, and he's living in Chicago. It's this guy Ben Whitla. He's back, like, in the Jersey area. I think he actually lives, like, really close to where I grew up now, which is really odd. But he was awesome, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm, you know, Syracuse is not an inspiring town.
The hip metropolis of upstate New York?
Yeah, like, not off the bat, especially not when, like, 9 months out of the year are just, like, ice and snow covered. And it's, like, this post-industrial, you know, suburban city of sorts. I mean, in retrospect, like, there are so many beautiful, awesome things about it, so I feel bad saying that. But, like, when you're, like, 19 and you're, like, wanting to, you know, live that life, it's like, you, I don't know.
Your angsty college years.
Yeah, Syracuse wasn't, like, an automatically. And like I said, like, we didn't have the internet at the time, so it's not like we had, you know, we didn't have Pinterest, we didn't have Dribbble, we didn't have social media like it is today at all, to be like, to be able to get that influence with, you know, when your locale doesn't afford that for you. We used to go to Barnes and Noble and, like, look through the books at Barnes and Noble to get inspired. That was, like, our quote unquote inspiration trip. but yeah,
hey,
so
there's still a place for that.
Yeah, totally. But I sent him this message on MySpace and was just like, oh, like, I'm really having a hard time, like, getting inspired in my work, and, like, I don't really know what to do. Like, it was this very general, like, I'm a student and I need to be inspired, help kind of message. And he just said, like, go take screenwriting classes in the art school. Like, I don't think you have to be in the art school, just, like, go take them. And so I went and took them, and it totally changed everything. So at that time in your life, you're such a sponge, like, that's why it's, like, a little awesome but also jarring for me now, when now that I'm, like, doing more podcasts and talks and, like, just generally talking to people who are earlier in their career, and then, like, I'll say something, they'll literally turn around and just go do the thing, and I'm like, oh shoot,
don't listen to me. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I've had more than one person, like, quit their job, like, within a week of talking to me. But I have to think that if those people,
I mean, no offense when I say this, I think that says more about them than it does about you.
Yeah, well, I think that, like, if somebody already kind of has it in their head, like, all you're doing is kind of validating that for them.
You're giving them permission to do what they already wanted to do.
Yeah, or putting it in other terms where, like, they're able to reason it a little better or a little differently, or just kind of lighting a fire, you know, under them a little bit more. So I don't take full responsibility, but I remember the first time somebody emailed me and was like, hey, like, I was thinking about what you were saying, and, you know, it was this girl, Kate Wong, who is an awesome illustrator, and she was working at this job that was just really eating her alive, and she was really stressed out, and I met her at Designer DK in Palm Springs, and I forget, but she was like, I was like, oh, did you try this? And she was like, yeah. I'm like, well, what about this? And she was like, yeah. and that's not working. And I was like, okay, then quit. And she sent me an email like the week after she got back. She wanted to pursue illustration full time, and she just sent me this email and was like, hey, I just wanted to let you know. And I was like, oh my God, please don't screw my name as you're jumping off the bridge. Like, I was so nervous.
So you're going through school. You head down to New York for a summer while you're in school and kind of get in with the music industry folks. Mm-hmm. After you've already, or well, before you told this girl what may ultimately lead to her demise.
She's doing really well, by the way. You should check her out.
Kate's Don't jump, Kate. It's not Jillian's fault. So you head back up. I'm assuming you head back up after the summer, and finish out school. Do you head back to New York right away, or do you bounce around looking for things for a little bit?
I was also interning in design in that summer too, but I might have liked music a little bit more at the time. Mm-hmm. I was enjoying pursuing it a little bit more. I mean, it's very fun and exciting and social, and like it always kind of balanced me out. I think like design is can be such a solo
lonely profession.
Yeah, like yeah. Well, when you put it that way. It can be very isolating, and you're using the one side of your brain, and music was very social, and the skill set is very organizational, and kind of you're coordinating a lot of other external forces as opposed to like your own internal forces.
You're herding cats?
Yeah, sometimes.
Having had friends who were in bands, you're herding cats.
Yeah. So I never really tell this part of the story because, earlier on I thought that it would look really bad, like when I was younger, but I actually interned in the art department of Rolling Stone magazine that summer, and I quit after a month. I was like the first person to apply to their internship program, like that March. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's perfect. Obviously, like, music and design, it seems perfect. And they had just shot that reality show of the interns working at Rolling Stone magazine on MTV. It was like, I don't know if you remember this, but it was like, it must have been in 2007 because they had just shot it, and so it was like very hip. But I quit after like a month because the guy that had hired me for the internship there left for Vogue magazine before I actually got there for the internship. And the person mm-hmm. who was running the internship like was horrible. And there was two of us, and they were still working in Quark. And so, and they were, had only taught us InDesign. And so, I was basically like going up there 3 days a week, like spending a lot of money on lunch and like making $0 and like doing zero things. And I was impatient. And the woman who was running it was like, if you don't want this internship, like you can go. Like there are tons of other people who would want your position. I was kind of like, wow, okay. See ya, bye. And I actually got this really.
So she really wanted you there.
Right? I mean, it was really shitty looking back. Like it, you know, like I get it. Like when you're an intern, you're not going to be doing the most glamorous stuff, but like, it's just really not a nice,
it's still not okay
vibe.
To treat an intern like a piece of dirt.
Yeah. 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 It just wasn't, there was somebody that I met there that I reconnected with years later that actually is super awesome. And so that is kind of a cool thing. And this guy, Joe Newton, was working there at the time. He was really awesome. He is a mm-hmm. New York illustrator and designer. And I reconnected with him through the New York Type community years later. So that was really fun. He's awesome. But yeah, I left and I actually found another internship on Craigslist. This woman was
not shady at all.
But that wasn't at the time, actually. It was actually like at the time, like a still pretty, like a sound way. I feel like more so than now to get stuff. Like it wasn't
a lot less mail order brides and kidnappers there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the summer that Daft Punk and The Rapture, they were on a tour together throughout the U.S. Okay. that summer. And this woman was putting on all of the after parties for that tour all over the country. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, I want to work with that. And it was literally her and then like one other guy and then one other like PR intern. It was four of us. And we just sat in this like tiny little room in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. And like, I actually got to design some stuff and like meet really cool people. And I got to work that after party at like this place that is there no longer, but it was called Studio B in Brooklyn, which is like mm-hmm. a very cool music venue. And it was like all the Ed Banger guys and like, yeah, I mean, it was really super cool. It ended up being a really good experience. And, you know, both of those jobs actually paid me some money. So they were
That's always nice.
But then, so you were asking about afterwards. I went back up to for my senior year and actually started a music company, which is another thing that I don't talk about the music stuff a lot because I'm a designer, so people don't care, maybe. I don't know. But it was like a really big part
I'm interested
of my life.
In it.
But I started this company where I brought up, because I was talking to all these New York City bands and they're like, where do we play up in Syracuse? And like, do you ever come up? They're like, we don't know who to talk to like book a show. And I was like, well, that's easy. I can book you a show. Super easy. And then I was friends with all the like local bands. So I would book mm-hmm. these New York City bands and partner them with Syracuse bands and rent out this big art space and put on this, I would have all my screen printing friends do like art for the show. We would have a theme and I would have them do art pieces for the show. Mm-hmm. It was called the Bang Project. And we would put on, I would get kegs and people were just like, it was a rager. it was super fun. I did a few of them. And so, yeah, that was super fun. But then after I graduated, I moved back home. My mom had moved back to the suburbs of Philly. Mm-hmm. And I moved back in with her. And it was 2008. So it's right when the market crashed.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really, really hard because I didn't really have a community there of any sort. And I wanted to be up in New York and I couldn't find work and I was not equipped as a designer to find a job at all. Like, mm-hmm. you know how like designers post work, like early work of theirs and they're like, oh, look at this awful thing I made, but it's like cute awful. Like my stuff is not cute awful at that time.
It was just awful.
It's really bad. Really, really bad. But yeah, so I was incredibly frustrated. That was a really, really hard time. Really hard for like a few years. I think like there are some like friends I have from the industry and like internet friends that I have that I still know now that like I'm sure like remember that time and I'm sure they didn't notice it as much as I did, but I was like in a really bad, I was super frustrated and I was super resentful in my education. And I mean, I'm just really impatient. I mean, that print I did at WMC that says patience ain't my virtue, like really, really impatient and just still young. So there wasn't any like filter to that. It was really like just this very aggravated time. And I, you know, there was a lot of like hopelessness. Like I didn't like know where to start. You know, I think I had this feeling probably up until I was at least like 26 or 27 years old where, you know, I knew where I was and I knew it wasn't where I wanted to be, but I knew that there was work to do to get there, but I didn't really know how. And the only thing that I do feel like I knew how to do was to recognize greatness in others. And like, it sounds kind of sleazy when I say it, but I don't mean it to be. And I don't think it comes across that way ever. Is like, I think one of my best skills that I've always had is to, like, I wasn't always the best, but I could always make friends with people who were the best, which sounds really sleazy, but like, there's
no, but I know what you mean by that.
But like, and not in order to like leech off them or to suck off them, but like I legitimately like just would meet these people. There was this guy that was a year ahead of me. His name was John Chanko, and he ended up making a blog and a book called Scanwiches. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It's literally scan sandwiches.
Gross.
No, it's great. No, you have to look it up. It's really well done.
I'll look it up. It's but really the well description done. When you put it that way.
But he's like, he was this guy from Austin, and he was just super scrappy, and he always just like got it. Like he just like the stuff that he made, and just the way his brain worked. And I always just wanted to know what he was doing, and I always wanted to see what he was working on. And I think like if you surround yourself, you know, there were a lot of different points throughout my life and throughout my career when I was trying to figure all this stuff out, that I just think like, if nothing else, I always like could recognize these other people that were doing really well. And as long as I kind of had those people as my North Star,
sure,
you know, it's just then putting one foot in front of the other and
sure,
trying to figure it out. So,
well, do you think with like that, and with, you know, when you're hanging out with music industry people and, you know, learning about all that stuff, do you think you were kind of subconsciously doing that, trying to figure out who you were at the time?
Oh, of course.
Because it sounds like when you said, you know, you came home and you were super frustrated. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I think everybody goes that, especially when they've got to move home with their parents after being out for a while. That's terribly frustrating. But, you know, do you think some of that from frustration came from trying to figure out what you wanted to do and figure out who you were?
I think at that time I thought I knew who I was. You know, I felt like I had this identity within design and music. You know, you build this identity within your social group and within your context within those 4 years of college. And you know, I thought that was who I was, you know, and all I saw was, I don't think I was self-aware enough at the time to see it as like, oh, but who am I as a human or as a whole, or really like evaluating and giving myself the ability to really, start from the ground level and build. I think it was like me thinking that I knew who I was and like trying to cling on to those identities that I thought were who I was, like at the core. Mm-hmm. But in hindsight, you know, I think there was like a realization that happened when I was in New York. I mean, there's kind of like different checkpoints along the way that lead up to it. But eventually you kind of start to realize, like when I was in New York, like I always knew I didn't want to stay there forever. And I was always like trying to explore other cities. Once I did get my first full-time job and start making some money, like I started going to conferences and visiting other cities around the country and just seeing like where I might be interested in. And I went to Chicago and I dated a guy who lived in Austin for 2 years, and I went to San Francisco, and nowhere really spoke to me. And
sure.
But still, like, I always knew something was missing. And it was like, mm-hmm. I got into yoga probably about 3 years into living in New York. And so that obviously, like, starts to breed, you know, some modicum of self-awareness that I didn't have before. And I think it was kind of like a building process from there. When I left New York, I told my yoga teachers, like, I don't think that I would be doing this move if it wasn't for the self-awareness I had gained from, you know, practicing yoga in New York. So I think it was like a gradual process figuring that out. But it wasn't until I really got here to LA that I don't think I ever really fully had the space to be like, okay, who am I now? You know, that was really the purpose of coming here. So
sure. Well, let's back up a little bit and talk about, you know, getting that first full-time job and your time in New York. That's not the internship time and not all that stuff time.
Yeah.
The actual when you're, you know, being a professional. So when you finally landed your first full-time job, what were you doing?
My first full-time job was at a place called Alloy, which if anybody remembers, the ladies out there, if they remember the catalogs that you used to get, like there was like Delia's and then there was Alloy, which was like the not as good Delia's. It's the same company, but like they've had a lot of different changes in their mission statement. I think they got acquired. Oh, here's my cat.
I see him.
I think they got
Hello, cat.
This is Betsy. I think they got acquired a few years ago, so they're called something different now. But it was at the time that I was there, it was a half digital marketing agency and half they ran websites like in the 12 to 24 kind of tween market, mostly female, but
sure.
They were doing a little bit more male stuff too when I got there. And I was designing basically title pages and like branding for web series that they would pitch to be co-branded mm-hmm. with like Procter & Gamble and Macy's and like all these like money makers. And we mm-hmm. were just doing like digital marketing campaigns, like skins and banner ads and like very just super archaic, non-creative, like unimaginative, like digital marketing. And then the other thing that I did there was rebranded one of the websites, and then they wanted to do this like merchandise initiative. So it was the super fluke project where I was actually designing like graphics for merchandise and clothing for 9 months for these like five different collections of merchandise, which was really fun. But the best part of that job was that I was hired by a girl who is now one of my best friends and mentors. And it was just like, if anybody's ever worked with somebody, you know, had a boss where like, you are so on the same page, like you literally read each other's minds, you get along amazing, that person really loves and cares about you and believes in you more than you believe in yourself. Like if anybody's ever had a boss like that, for one, you're lucky as hell. And for me, that was my first boss at my first full-time job. And she was there for a little over the first year that I was there. And that was really the, I mean, I have to say, like, looking back now, that set the precedent for my entire career, like, having her as not only, like, a mentor, but a lady mentor up front. Mm-hmm. And going into my job after that, it was really crucial that I had that example set for me. So, because she never lost her cool. She was, like, super, I mean, to this day, she's, like, my number one mentor about everything I call her with every problem.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I got that job through Creative Circle because I had been freelancing. They started placing me after a few months in New York. They had started placing me at various ad agencies on a temp basis. And then they eventually found me that job full time.
Gotcha. So how long were you there? Did you say?
About 2.5 years, I think.
About 2.5 years. So at that point, are you doing pretty much just strictly design, or are you getting to do some illustration work?
So I basically realized lettering was a profession when I moved back up to New York, like before I got that job, and Twitter was really becoming a thing at the time. And like, I don't know exactly where Jessica Hish was in her career at the time, but she was engaging in Twitter and social media a lot. And she was also up in New York in the same areas. And, you know, I kind of just was started keeping tabs on her career a little bit as she was kind of blossoming from Louise Feely into her independent studio. And then John Contino at the time also was kind of coming up and watching these people and being like, wait a minute, like there are people that draw letters for a living, like full time, 100%. And not only that, but like a lady's doing it. That's awesome. And that's 100% what I need to be doing. And so I just started doing it. And I was obviously awful at it at first, as everybody is when you start something. But that was kind of like what started the wheels turning in terms of like the lettering and the type stuff. And so as I was at that full time job, I mean, I was going to Type Directors Club, and the Cooper Union lectures that they have in New York, and just going to all the talks, all the lectures, meeting people, making friends, eating tacos with people, like bribing them to like look at the stuff that I was making and tell me if it was garbage. And I made some really awesome friends. Isabel, who spoke at WMC, is one of those friends. That's how we know each other. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just kind of doing that as I'm at this full-time job. So it was kind of going on simultaneously. And then mm-hmm. I stopped working in music when I was at that job as well. I was booking shows at another venue called Spike Hill, which has since closed. But I left there to focus on design full-time. So there was a lot kind of like, I was like coming into lettering, going out of music. And after my first boss left, it was just a nightmare for me there. It was the kind of place that really saw design as production, as the end of the line, and didn't really
sure.
value it from a conceptual standpoint too much. I worked there 3 years, and like the GM like didn't know my name still. So it was like one of those kind of places. And it was just miserable. And they ended up letting me go January 2013, I believe.
Okay.
But I was like super happy about that. I was like, they let me go at like 10. I was drinking scotch by 11. Like I was so happy. I was like, severance, money to not work there anymore. Great. Love it. but I was,
you're going to pay me to not be miserable at my job. Okay.
Yeah. I was super, super ready to go. And like, funny enough, there was this, this headhunter who was amazing, and she had always followed my work, but never placed me anywhere. She had emailed me actually that morning and about an opportunity that ended up being my next job before she even knew that I was let go. So that kind of was really seamless in that respect. So that came up right on its heels.
Gotcha. Yeah. So after you get set free, where do you end up then? Where does this headhunter find you a job right on the heels of being let go?
Yeah, it's a place called AKA. They're one of the three agencies in New York that make art for Broadway theater and off-Broadway theater and some other entertainment stuff as well, but mainly that. So I freelanced there for about a month, and then they wanted me full-time. And I was really interested. I was considering going freelance then, but I was still, I think I was like 25 at the time, and I still felt like I had a bunch to learn. And this guy, Rich Tu, who is an awesome designer, art director, he was the art director there at the time, and we just kind of really hit it off. Like my first day freelancing, it was a Friday. We kind of chit-chatted all day, and then that night went out for drinks and just talked a lot and really connected. And I felt like I had a lot to learn from him, and yeah, I really had no idea exactly how much I would learn from him, but it was, yeah, so I ended up taking that full time, and I was there for about 2 years, a little under 2 years.
Okay. Yeah. So what was it ultimately that kind of led you to moving to LA, going out on your own, other than the yoga instructor who taught you to find yourself? Which when I say it that way, sounds super creepy. other than all that stuff, what was it that finally kind of led you to making that leap?
I came and visited LA probably about a year, a little over a year before I moved here. I had a friend who lived here, and I'd never been. And just immediately when I got here, I felt really peaceful, and I loved it. And it's just something you can't describe when you connect with a city like that. I mean, a lot of people have felt that, and it just felt really good. And I wasn't immediately thinking about moving here. Then there was kind of a sequence of events. I mean, I was miserable at my job for a really long time. It was a sweatshop at times. It's really hard for me to talk about how hard it was there. I mean, I talked about it in my WMC talk a little bit, but it's still sometimes really hard for me to talk about because I really feel like I have to preface. I really respect and admire a lot of the people at that company, and I learned so much there. And it's really hard for me to pull apart, like, what was, I don't know, what was
to separate the good from the bad.
Yeah, and like if I would be where I am today, if it wasn't so hard. I don't know. It sounds really fucked up, but
sounds like an abusive relationship.
Yeah, it was at times, but it's really hard for me to know, because I think a large part of it had to do with my age and lack of experience in managing myself in a way where I could was really aware of and could fight for, like, my boundaries in certain mm-hmm. respects. But it really defeated, is a word I use a lot, with how I felt mm-hmm. when I was there, just really defeated, really overworked, and kind of feeling like, I don't know, just really strung out. It just really, like, took everything out of me, and so I knew that I needed to have a major reset. And so my landlord sold our building, my apartment building, and I had actually somewhat rededicated myself to that job. I had been there a year, and Rich, our art director, had left. And so, and I really wanted to move more into art direction, and I was already, like, art directing certain projects, but I didn't have that official position yet, and I really wanted to work towards that. And I really would have liked to stay at the job longer to see how mm-hmm. you can grow in those types of situations. But I really had kind of rededicated myself to that. But then my landlord had sold our building to developers, and he wouldn't renew my lease. And I was kind of like, whoa, man, like, does this mean that I should make a crazy thing. Like, does this mean that I should just go look for another apartment, or does this mean that I should sell all my stuff and drive across the country for 10 days by myself and start a new life and start a new business? And I did the second thing. So. Yeah. I mean, I tried to be honest with myself. I kind of thought backwards, because I was like, well, that sounds big and crazy and scary. But then I was like, okay, well, if I was to do it, like, hypothetically, how would I do it? Would I drive or would I fly? Okay, well, I would drive because I have a cat. I need to drive her there. You know, like, mm-hmm. how, you know, it's like, okay, well, what would I do with this thing? And then you kind of just end up in this place where you have a plan. It's kind of like what Sagmeister was saying at WMC, like, you know, people think they can't do these big things, like he was talking about sabbaticals mm-hmm. or anything like that. But it's like with planning, you can kind of do anything, you know, you just need to plan it out. So,
yeah, I would like him to plan a sabbatical for me so I could figure out how I could afford it.
Oh, no, that's not how that works.
Or just ask if he could just mentor me and guide me in that planning phase, I will settle for that.
By mentor and guide, do you mean put cash in your hands? Because that's what that sounds like.
Well, I'll take that too. No, because, I mean, in his talk, he said you can really do it for not a lot of money. So, right. But his definition like of not person. A lot of money. Yes. His version of not a lot of money may be my version of all of the money that I have ever made.
I really enjoy it when rich people talk about how money shouldn't matter. It's really amusing to me.
Yes. Yes.
I worked on a project recently where the person was like, oh, well, what about the greater good, and what about the community, and like, why does it always have to be about money? And I was like, wow, sounds like something a rich person would say.
Because I still have to pay my mortgage,
yeah,
and eat,
yeah. Oh my god, I love money so much.
Many, I like Netflix.
Yeah, I like to eat things other than toast.
Yes, like Wendy's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just
changed, you did tweet that.
I changed my Twitter profile the other day. Have you seen it yet?
I don't know that I paid that much attention to it.
Yeah, no, because it says aspiring millionaire. That's my name.
Aspiring millionaire. Yes, I did see that. I thought that was funny.
That's my new job title.
I think that's a good job to have. That's a good goal to set for yourself.
It's from New Girl, if anybody watches New Girl. Schmidt on New Girl. That's what he says his job title is, aspiring millionaire. And I relate to that.
Yeah, I watched the first two seasons of New Girl, and then I got sidetracked with something and haven't caught back up. So I need to go add that to my queue on Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, but you have to be careful because I snort laugh at that show so much that I can't even get anything done. So you have to be careful. That show is so funny.
Yeah,
so I blanked.
So you end up after a 10-day road trip with a cat.
I didn't actually bring my cat. I left my cat with my mom.
Okay. Ah. Yeah.
Did
you get a new cat when you got out there since you have a cat?
No, my cat flew her out. My mom flew her out. Can you imagine my cat flew my mom out? No, my mom flew my cat out.
Yes, the cat bought a first class ticket. Yeah.
She was a trooper. She did real good. Yeah, my mom flew her out because you can drive across the country in less than 10 days. I did it in 10.
Yeah.
Because I took some time. I took a full day in Nashville. I took a full day in Austin. I went through.
Took time to see friends and sightsee and stuff.
Yeah, I did like the middle of my trip. I stayed with people that I knew. So I wasn't, just alone the whole time. I was staying with friends.
Yeah.
So, it was the best spirit quest ever.
So when you get to LA, at this point, I'm assuming you already have enough of a client base where you can not be eating top ramen every day of the week. And
you mean now or when I got out here?
When you got out there.
Oh, no, I had zero. I had nothing.
Oh, zero.
Oh, my God. I had nothing. I had a bunch of preconceived notions about what it would be like to do this work, and they were all wrong. So I was really poor for a really long time.
Gotcha. Yes.
No, it was horrible. It was really bad.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I didn't realize at all. And retrospectively, I see how much work, if I had known, the decision to move was, I guess it wasn't that quick. I decided to move in July and I moved in November, so I had a bunch of months. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't know. So like before I moved, I wanted to know what I was going to do when I got out here. I wanted to have a plan. I had a book idea. I had all these different ideas of things that I wanted to do. I wanted to have a plan and nothing stuck. Like I couldn't bring anything into action. And it was actually really frustrating because when I tell you about like that music company that I started that in a day. Like that was something that I thought of. I made it. I started putting it into action all immediately. So I'm pretty good when I have an idea. I do it big and I do it immediately. And so it was really frustrating to have all these like kind of ideas that were just kind of fizzling out and not sticking. And I had dinner with a friend and I was explaining this to him and he gave me great advice, which is that on the other side of this experience, I'm going to be a different person. And so I need to let that experience happen and then, take it from there on the other side. And he was absolutely right. I mean, I'm even a different person from the day that I got here.
Yeah. It'd be a little scary if you weren't.
Yeah, I've changed so much. But when I got out here, I had no idea what I was doing. And it was really hard to figure out how to sell myself to people. I mean, it was hard to even kind of know who would want to hire me. Like,
sure.
Yeah. So.
So what was it that finally clicked?
It was kind of little things over time, one thing at a time. I think it's funny, and I don't know, I mentioned this to somebody the other day, I don't know if it was like on social media or something, but a lot of people have the impression that if you win an award or get a really high profile project, like if you win Young Guns or for me, it was in the first year I wanted to win Young Guns and be published in the New York Times. Those were like my two things. And I was like, if I get those two things, that's it. I'm going to like be set, you know, and like business will just be rolling in and it'll be awesome. And somehow within 4 months of that year, like 4 months of being in business, I did get a piece in the New York Times op-ed. So I thought that like that was, I mean, I was living out. I was like, that's it. Like, how did I get that? Like 4 months. That's awesome. But it just,
that is awesome. I've never been in the New York Times.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to negate that at all, but I had no work after that for months. Like there, mm-hmm. it wasn't like that happens and that's it.
Everybody notices you. Yeah.
Not at all. And it's just one small step. You know, I think every project you engage in levels you up, hopefully levels you up in a different way and doesn't set you back. But I think it all just, it's like, it's such a long game. And I think there's so much emphasis. And I mean, I'm still super young, I'm only 30, but there's so much emphasis on being so successful by 30 or being so successful before 30. Mm-hmm. or, you know, getting these opportunities that, you feel like I used to think that like, I would only be successful if I got Young Guns. And now it's kind of like, Young Guns is amazing. I love our Directors Club. I mean, but I think like those kinds of things happen when you actually don't like need them. I think they happen kind of like when you could go either way. I mean, they're amazing with the opportunities they present, but they kind of happen when you're not even kind of thinking about them anymore. Anyway, I'm past. I totally missed Young Guns this year. They did it differently, and I was at Uber at the time, and I totally just missed whatever they were doing. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I guess that's not happening. But like, but it's great because I mean, I don't want to say I don't care, but like, I see. The bigger picture and the longer game, it's such a long game, you know, and I think there's so much like urgency to get to a certain place so early on, and that's unnecessary. So I'm super happy with what the last 2 years have brought business wise. And I mean, my therapist always says to me stuff like a really good way to get perspective is to be like, okay, well, would you a year ago think that you today are successful or that you today are happy or that you're doing well or whatever? And, you know, I mean, for me, the answer is 100% yes. So, yeah, I think
that's a good one. Do you hear my cat, by the way?
I did, only when you said it. It's not a kitten, though. It's a cat.
No, that's the cat. Oh, yeah. I found the kittens. They're in a basket. I'll show them to you afterwards. This is going to be super out of context for everybody who wasn't at the first part of the conversation before we started recording.
We're talking about kittens. Everybody loves kittens. They will be fine.
Exactly. I'll win the internet with my kittens. So you've been out in LA for a couple years, and, you know, real briefly, since we're kind of getting close to our time, I want to talk to you about, and I don't know how to segue into this, so I'm just going to.
I think I know where you're going right now.
Well, yeah. So, and this, granted, I am like the one person who didn't get to see your talk at WMC Fest.
Because
I was, no, because I was doing the podcast then.
Why did they schedule them at the same time? That's really silly.
I don't know.
Heather and Brian. In trouble.
I think they were conspiring against me.
Well,
I'm joking.
Oh, geez. Okay. All right. Well, then yeah, ask so what I, you're gonna ask.
So everybody I talked to got to see you. Like, there were people who jumped out for like 10 minutes to come talk to me and then like ran right back to your presentation.
Aw, that's so nice.
So
why? Because I was showing videos and photos of butts?
Well, I don't think they knew you were showing photos of butts at the time that they, like, when they would hop out to go back in.
Is that where you were going with this question, though?
That's where I was going, yeah. So,
okay.
So, you know, and I bring it up because you do have it listed on your website that you're, you know, big into the pole dance and spiritual communities. So,
oh, did you just look at my website like today or the other day?
I think it was yesterday, but yeah.
That's not even public yet, Jason. It will be by the time this podcast goes live, I think.
Yeah, well, it's up there.
I know, it's not hidden, but I've been working on it. That's my new website, so there you
Yay.
Go. Yeah.
Yay.
So what?
So, you know, I got nothing.
You really can't even ask the question, Kenny. So you're just like,
so how did
pole,
you?
Pole dancing,
I mean, what
talk.
Was it that you? Yeah, just talk.
Just talk about
what
it.
Was it that made you decide to get into, you know, the pole dancing, which I'm gonna assume started out as more of a just doing it as not that you're. I think we should clarify that there's a difference between a. doing pole dancing and working at the $5 strip club down the street.
I have danced at a strip club. I don't dance at a strip club for rent money yet.
I do have, things are going well enough where you're not having to rely on that.
Yeah. I have seriously considered it. I do have many friends who are strippers and they're amazing. And it's not a $5 strip club. It's a really impressive strip club, and anybody who comes to town, I pretty much, you know, like, designers are funny. They're like, oh, which museums do I go to and where do I eat a fancy chicken sandwich? And I'm like, I don't know, but I'll take you to the strip club. but yeah, I mean, I, in a social context, sooner would relate to strippers than I would to quote unquote pole fitness. Only for stigma's sake. There's actually a debate within the pole community. There are, you know, since this whole pole fitness thing has become a thing, about 10, 15 years ago, it started up.
Mm-hmm.
There has actually been a movement to specifically say, but I'm not a stripper, as if being a stripper is, you know, horrible and demonic. And so there's actually a movement within the pole community that's just like a hashtag that says yes, a stripper. And it's basically just just being really supportive of.
I'm going to start using that hashtag.
but it's legitimate because it's like there are a lot of people within the pole community who have a lot of animosity towards strippers. And it's ridiculous because they're, you know, like it's not like a dirty, horrible thing all the time.
No, but I think there's this stigma that's come along with it, with where people associate a stripper with, like, you know, strung out crackhead who's, you know,
sure,
given a handy in the champagne room.
Sure.
And, you know, not that there aren't those out there, but, you know, there's a difference between that and, you right. know, a high end club too.
But that's why it's so important for, you know, all the other, the community out there who isn't doing that, even though they are dancing exotically for cash, to be visible and to stand up for themselves and for us to stand up for them. And, you know, there are pole studios that even are very uncomfortable. There are pole competitions that aren't stripper friendly. So it's a thing within the community. I mean, it's a thing within a thing, but, I got into it because,
I mean, how would they know? How would the competitions know unless you told them?
I don't intimately know because I've never competed and I don't really, plan on it, but I just know that that's kind of the general thing. I don't know the intricacies, but, but it's unfortunate, you know? So anyway, that's the thing within a thing. But But I got into it. I had tried two classes in New York with another design friend, Lara of Ghostly Ferns, who I know goes to Creative South. She's been pulling for years. And she took me to two classes, and it didn't really stick too much. But then when I came out to LA, I had wanted to find a yoga studio, and I was on ClassPass, and then I also wanted to try pole again. And there's another designer, Jolene Chrisman in Chicago, who has been poling for years and would post videos, and I just loved it. It looked really awesome. I've always been a super like overtly sensual person, and I danced when I was younger, and so it appealed to me really more for the sensual expression than anything else. So I went, and if you were in my talk, you would have heard the story of my first pole class, which is really fun. But I ended up finding my studio. It was the second studio I went to out here. And I mean, do we have time for me to tell you the story? It's not super long, but
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I go, basically the first pole class I went to here was at a studio, and it was kind of like this Asian chick in workout clothes, no shoes, like super normal, a warm up, you try a few things and then you go home. And then when I went to my studio, which is now my home studio, I walked in, and it was taught by this woman, Sienna, who, to give you kind of a visual, since we're in an audio world right now, her and her best friend, who used to also come to her classes, are now LMFAO's party rock crew.
Oh, okay.
So if you look at
I think you told me this when we were driving in from the airport.
Oh, okay.
Seem to remember you saying something about LMF.
Well, that's the only context I'd probably mention them. So,
yeah, because I mean, that's not exactly one that just you randomly drop in conversation of.
Well, I guess it could.
So,
But like, just very, very colorful personality, and she's super, super tall, and she's in her 8-inch pink stiletto pleasers and her colorful leggings with her big fake beautiful bosom and her. Her big,
you know, pink. Bosom actually makes it sound creepier.
Really?
A little bit.
Her massive tits.
No, there we go. That's, yeah.
Like, where? I don't know where to go with that.
I don't know. For some reason, when you say bosom, I think like this.
Like an old woman.
like this old woman at this German beer hall. Ooh. In the, okay. You know, whatever the female version of Lederhosen is. There we go.
Massive pink bunny phone, and she had us do sexy warm up, which was like body rolls and like all this stuff. And I, you know, just like the feeling of it was coming from like this very, like, New York was a very masculine experience for me. All my friends in New York were guys. It was all ad industry, design industry people, like always like less women than men. In the room, and come into this environment, and it just like exploding femininity and sexuality everywhere in a really like safe way. It's hard to explain unless you experience it, but it turned out to be like everything that I was missing in my life. And it just was, I feel like it was just a gateway drug that cracked everything open. I mean, even if you lead it all the way up till now, where like the most recent development has been like taking up tarot and going to like new moon women circles, and like I'm going to a full moon hike with a bunch of witches tomorrow night. Like, you know, like,
I'm sorry, what?
But like really connecting with like, you know, the divine feminine and like that whole kind of thing. Like, it all started there. Kittens! I don't want to yell into the microphone.
There's one of them.
Oh my God.
I literally just had to pull his claws out of the waistband of my shorts.
I can't wait for the future where you can hand me the kitten through the video.
Oh, that'll be awesome.
I know.
Holla kitten.
Oh, guys, I wish you could see this kitten. So that's what that experience was. And it was just like, I started making friends there, but it was like, I feel like that was the gateway drug to just reconnecting with my femininity. And I would say it was probably, so since you missed my talk, about 6 months about 6 months after that, 6 or 7 months after that, that I met a girl named Liz, who goes by Carmine Black on the internet, if anybody wants to internet her, which if you have a pulse, you probably do. She started teaching.
I'll wait till my kids go to sleep.
Oh, it's not that bad.
I'm joking.
Well, I met her in class. She wasn't teaching yet, but she was just about to start teaching, and her movement just completely was what spoke to me. It was kind of this combination of exotic and lyrical, and sometimes it was emotional and dark, and sometimes it was like super energetic and light, and we just became friends, and then we would just jam after class when she started teaching, and now she's one of my best friends and my next door neighbor, and that's kind of, you know, so it's kind of like what hooked me in, and then kind of like what kept me coming back. And then through her, I mean, she teaches at a lot of different studios. I met just like people from all over the pole community, like internet friends and people in LA at different studios, and really just started finding my community there.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, you know, kind of crossing over to the moon hike with the witches.
I said that kind of classy. I don't actually know if they're witches, but I think I know some of them are. I mean, I've never been before, so. Yeah.
So being the, you know, stereotypical white guy who grew up in the Midwest.
Uh-huh. Own it, you know, own it, love it.
I got no problem with it. You know, I'm fully meat and potatoes. Uh-huh. Actually, I'm not, because not too many art majors are. But, you know, I still have that ingrained sensibility in it. So while I'm accepting of it, there's that part of my brain where I'm just like, what? I don't get it. So
wait, about which part? About like the spirituality stuff or the pole stuff?
Both, I guess. But more okay. The... So, like, I find it fascinating, but I just look at it in that, like, reserved Midwestern block goes up in my head where I'm just like, nope, not something I could do. Like,
that's
just
fine. It's not for everybody.
But, like, not in a judgy way, just, but then, like, when, like, less about the pole dancing, but more about the, that's not much even spirituality, but the, like the tarot stuff that we talked about when we were up at WMC Fest, I'm fascinated with that. I think it's fun.
Yeah, you are. Tell me more about that. You speak now.
Yeah. So, like, I find it really interesting, but I don't know that I find it more than, like, a fun parlor game.
Uh-huh.
But
that's kind of why I didn't want to pull for you on the podcast, because it felt gamey to me a little bit and not authentic.
Yeah, no. Yeah, no, no, but, yeah, I don't want it to be that way. Like, I don't want to put in somebody where it feels like I'm just doing it to be funny or like a one-off irony sort of thing.
But I can explain to you why I connect to it, if that's what you're interested in hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm the first one to admit, like, I'm like, if you're gonna be in a camp, I am in the skeptic camp of, like, quote unquote, like, magic or like any of that kind of thing. Like, I don't really work in like magic and hopes and dreams. Like, I'm really not. I'm like a super realist.
You don't think Merlin actually existed?
No, I do, but I think I come from like a totally different like place than most people would come from. And I don't believe in like fate and the universe and like all that. Like, I very strongly believe in the power of people. And in the power of people's energy and creativity and intuition. And I have seen, you know, there's kind of this, like, distrust of ourselves that people have. And it's...
Yes.
And it's so accepted is what's odd to me. Like, it's so... It's like the accepted thing. And, you know, like, if somebody... if somebody turns around on a whim and says, like, mm-hmm. I need to go get a sewing machine tomorrow because my womb told me to, or like, I need to go get a sewing machine because my inner voice is telling me to, or like something like that. And then they just go and do it. And then they just start making stuff, or like whatever it is. Like that seems like somehow, I think it can seem like kind of just wishy-washy to some people, or kind of like weird, as opposed to being like fucking awesome. Like, I don't know. Like, people just don't trust that inner voice in their head. They think it's like this silly thing that just kind of like floats around. And I think,
oh, I'm very good about not trusting that.
Do you know what I mean, though? And like, I think that all it is like a skill and a practice to tune into yourself. To know, like, it becomes way less of like a silly thing that you write off, and it becomes like, okay, this is what I need right now. Cool. You know?
Okay.
It becomes way less of a suggestion and just way more of like an obvious thing. But with tarot, it was more meditative for me, and my thing is, like, a lot of people think tarot is about telling the future, and I always tell them it's about retelling the present. It's not going to tell you anything new. It's only going to tell you things you already know. And it kind of like reframes things.
Sure.
So that's kind of like how I look at it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I get it from that point of view, because I mean, like, so for me, I'm pretty damn empathic. You know, my mood is very dependent on the way people are around me, because like, I'll pick all that up, whether I'm conscious of it or not. I mean, and that happens to everybody to an extent. Like, if you're around somebody who's just a grumpy asshole all day, you come home and you're kind of a grumpy asshole. But like, that sort of stuff really affects me and like really weighs heavy on me. And it's, as much as I try to push stuff like that out, I can't. But I don't trust my gut enough, I guess, to know when I need to remove myself from situations like that. Does that make sense?
You're saying other people's actions and moods affect you more than you think they should?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That, you see that as being empathic? I just see that as being like incredibly sensitive, which I think is a little different.
Well, I'm also like, even if someone seems like they're in a good mood, like, and everybody else thinks that they're in a good mood, I'm the one person who knows that they're really, really sad. Like, that's what, I guess that's more what I mean with like, I'm well aware that I am very sensitive, but it's stuff like that.
Well, that
like,
sounds more intuitive. And that's just being really sensitive. And that's totally a part of like being good at touching, you know, checking in with your intuition, you know, that you have to take care of yourself too. I feel like this is turning into a therapy session.
I feel like it is too. I feel like I may have had this discussion with my therapist last week. After this.
but it's so cool. But I will say, like,
my copay is $50.
Yeah. I will eat better than Wendy's. But I think like it's interesting, because when I started polling, I just noticed that my conversations with people were becoming more lush than they ever had been before, with other business owners and with designers and with other dancers, with people in general. And then I think it's just all kind of the same trajectory, in terms of like everything I've gotten into now has just been kind of an extension of working that base of vulnerability and empathy and intuition and like all that kind of stuff. Because like, my conversations now aren't about like, okay, how do you draw this letter? They're about like, but like, what do you need right now? You know what I mean? And they're about, and I've become so much more interested. I wish I was good at photography. I wish I was a photographer, because I find myself so interested in other people's stories. Like when you and I were emailing, and I'm like, know, like, what are you up to? And like, what are you doing? And what are you about? And I, you know, had said that, you know, Lenny and I were having that conversation, and Jeff Finley and I had that conversation. And, you know, I am so interested about that. And I think that's really been the huge, the kind of shift that's happened for me, you know, whether it ends up being design or tarot or dancing or whatever the hell it ends up being 5, 10, 15 years from now, is that
millionaire.
Yes. Whatever it is, I hope there's millionaire on the end and I can take the aspiring path for sure.
Better yet, billionaire.
Yeah. But I think it's so much better when you can do it with other people, and it's so much better. I mean, you're probably the first person to say that because you've put so much work into connecting with other people and listening to their stories with this podcast.
Sure.
But it's so, I love hearing other people's stories, and I love, I have this collaboration idea that I wanted to start up after WMC that I hope I have time to start up soon after my website is finished. But it's all about like really opening it up and celebrating collaboration, and not just collaboration in the typical sense, but kind of like getting in each other's spaces and energies and like affecting each other. You know, design is such a solitary thing, and just like music business was for me, like I think dancing and like all this other stuff does it for me now, where it's more of an extroverted social aspect, and I really want to bring that into design and into this project and really like affect each other. Like when you're dancing, like the studio you're in, the people you're with, the music you're playing all affects how you move and what you do. And I want to do that in a visual sense somehow. So I'm trying to figure that out right now. But I really like, I'm interested in hearing people's stories. I'm interested in hearing their processes, and I'm interested in like inserting myself into that and having them insert themselves. Oh God, I'm going to say it. Insert themselves into me. Oh God, I said it. oh God, it sounded so good in my head. Oh, it sounded so good.
Freudian slip.
I had to commit. It was like halfway out, and then I had to commit to it.
Oh, you're just digging your hole there. It was halfway out. Insert it in.
Let's talk about holes.
Oh, this is all staying.
And the end. The end. This is over yet. Okay.
I don't know how to recover after that.
There's no going back.
No.
I'm a 12-year-old boy. That's what I am.
I think everybody is a 12-year-old boy inside at some point.
Yeah.
Everybody's sense of humor gets stunted at puberty. There is no good way to transition from
that's just gonna be a soundbite, like a GIF now, right? Like that's just gonna be like if I come to Creative South, you're just gonna like play that over the loudspeaker.
Well, I hadn't thought of it till you mentioned it. Now I feel like I have to. I feel like I'm obligated to. Just I'll put that as my ringtone. Every time you call.
You still use a ringtone?
I have a phone.
I feel like everybody just leaves it on vibrate.
Well, I do, but every once in a while I turn the sound on.
Is it like a song?
It's the Doctor Who theme, because I'm a big old nerd.
I feel like I haven't heard an actual like ringtone in at least 10 years.
Yeah. It's, I mean, most of the time, yes, it is on vibrate and it's in my pocket. And that sounded just as bad. but when it does actually make a sound, it is the Doctor Who theme.
Ooh, I hear the cats.
Yep, they're getting active here. So, kind of wrapping up, aside from finishing up your website, what's on deck for you?
I'm kind of trying to figure that out. Since WMC, for the last like 3 weeks or so, I've had my first lull in work for the year. I have some potential gigs coming up that are TBD. I want to start that collaboration thing. It will be called Friend Party.
Friend Party. Okay.
So that is the next to do on my list. And then I'm trying to really light the fire under my butt to get this stuff done, because the second new work comes in, I like get pulled away so fast. But I think there might be also some speaking engagements in 2017. I don't really want to say yet, but yeah, more speaking about inappropriate
things. Awesome.
I think that's it.
Well, cool. So where can people find out more about you online?
I'll have a fancy new website up at JillianAdell.com real soon. Probably launching Monday. I don't know when this podcast is airing, but
sometime in October probably.
Oh, okay. Then yeah. So JillianAdell.com. And Twitter and Instagram are my social medias of choice, which are just my name. Except Instagram, there's a B as in boy in the middle because somebody took my name.
That horrible person.
I thought you were going to say that whore, and I...
No, I just said that horrible person.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
I don't know them. That's rather specific.
Do you have an explicit rating on this podcast? Because
no, you can say whatever you want.
Jeez. Yeah. So that's where. Twitter, Facebook. Oh, no, not Facebook. Twitter, Instagram, and my website is where my internet self lives.
Awesome. Yeah. So we end every podcast by saying go out and hug some necks, which is just kind of a way of saying, you know, go out, meet friends, don't be a stranger. Would you mind taking us out?
Oh, I should say that? Uh-huh. Okay, go out and hug some necks.
Jillian, thank you so much for joining me and making inappropriate jokes and
anytime
gushing over my kittens.
Oh, kittens forever.
You can find out more about Jillian on Twitter and Dribbble at Jillian Adell, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with her. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and our new Facebook page at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jack.inc/design and get up to $75 off your next order when you use promo code CSPodcast16. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.